Hello, I'm Mark Sinclair, and this is Freaky Trigger and the Lollards of Pop. We don't quite have our theme tune yet because Eli is stuck on the tube. But we're making do. It's a minute or two afternoon on Sunday afternoon, February the 4th, and you're listening to Resonance FM 104.4. Ahead on the programme today, garden rubbish. We grab a dibber and a trug and mulch compost all round your prized blooms. Our suavely informed experts, Drs. Brand and Drugs, will cast their respective professional eye over the issues driving some out there in lolladry towards confusion and twisted doubt. The Stone Roses, by any name, would sound as sheet. We consider the finest points of all when it comes to the titling of rock bands and pop groups. We put the punk back into punctuations not dead. And plus, we get all frisky and rub one another with sweet smelling oils. Well done, us. In between these frolics, we'll listen to Hurrah, Seed, and Sonido Drasalaca, as well as a sneak preview of the new UK number one. Always a surprise now the charts rules have changed. For the next hour, live from the lost city of Machu Picchu in the Handy Andes, recently voted seventh wonder of the world because of the silent click when said correctly.
Matthew Paris does it so much better.
In the middle of the second word. I hate Matthew Paris.
We all hate Matthew Paris.
There are two new Lollards today, joining old wag Tim Hopkins. Welcome Steve Carsmile Hewitt, Knobsman of Yore, and in fact not of Yore at the moment.
Hello.
And Katie Grocott.
Hello.
But first, what has gone before? Says here, bed fade out. Excuse me. Nonsense, when all is said and done, is still nonsense. But the study of nonsense, that is science. Freaky Trigger, the internet's one sane collective, drops science so you can pick it back up again. Website admin Scary Alang has once again been trying to winkle his beloved Sapphire and Steel into the TV pantheon. Lord Sukrat has unearthed a medieval cookbook called The Form of Curry. Form being the root word for cheese in French and Italian. We rediscover what was once common knowledge, that the English all had tails. Further adventures in the assistant flight patterns of fruit show that if it's furred, it goes further. And former Lollard pop choice Benny Hill completes a glam triptych, following Rod Stewart and Slade as Tom Ewing's Popular, an epic journey through every UK number one, reaches 1972. All this can be found by typing freakytrigger.co.uk into your web browser. The big story this week is the return of the classic board game Monopoly, which Hasbro Toys is apparently aggressively remarketing. Now, in the Sinker household, I was always the one deputed to master the rules of a new board game. And by the time I had, everyone else had lost interest. So I spent long solitary days, well, I was going to say playing with myself. I mean, being each player in turn. Which made me extremely fair-minded, even-handed, uncompetitive and lovable. Fine characteristics in a radio presenter, but presumably not exactly what this game was intended to foster. Tim, were you ever told you weren't allowed to sell the little car to stay in the game?
I think selling the little car was never really on the agenda in my household. Mostly, games of Monopoly were all about my brother brutalising the rest of the family, which is kind of turned out to be the way it's rolled for the rest of our lives, by way of his, you know.
So Monopoly taught him well, or he was already like that?
I think he was already set up to exploit the opportunities made available by the game of Monopoly. I feel a bit sad that they're remarketing Monopoly Classic. I used to quite enjoy seeing regional Monopolies crop up around and about the place. I remember going to Southend once and seeing the local tourist information office trying to flog an Essex Monopoly, which I thought was way cool, although I didn't really feel like buying it myself, you understand.
What was Mayfair?
You know, I really wish I could remember. Oh. If only I'd done some research.
Maybe it's Southend Pier.
Epping or
Faden Boys.
Yeah, it's probably somewhere up country.
Yes.
Up that end, up in the leafy end of Essex, as opposed to the greasy Thames estuary.
Wherever Rod Stewart's got his mansion, I reckon.
I didn't know Rod lived up Essex.
Oh, I think he's an Epping resident at the moment. I think.
Is he really?
I don't know if my mum ever sees him down Waitrose in Buckhurst Hill or anything, but I believe he has some kind of large country pile out there somewhere.
Oh, bless Rod and his piles.
Yeah.
Were there northern versions?
I certainly remember when I was living in Oxford, there was an Oxford version.
That's which, not northern.
No, I know, but
yes,
I,
it is.
It's been such a long time since I've lived in the north that they didn't have such strange variations.
What was Mayfair?
I think Mayfair might have been the shopping centre. I think it was one of those dreadful ones where they'd sold each slot to a local business rather than it being traditionally based on the different colleges or whatever.
Oh.
It was a kind of very
horrible. So it would be like Midlands Parade?
Yes.
It would be like the DIY centre in Darleydale and Measham would be Mayfair.
Yes, I think so. But no, I mean, I...
That's the Midlands, sorry.
Monopoly wasn't overly encouraged in our house because, you know, I come from a strong, good northern socialist background. Certainly my dad was never overly keen on playing Monopoly, although we'd occasionally drag it out, but it wasn't the top game in the house.
Then there's never been a Bolshevik variant.
I don't think so. Although, of course, the story goes that originally it was set up as a satire of capitalism, but much in the same way as Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen is clearly taken on board by those in the right wing, so Monopoly went the same way.
Katie.
Yes.
We're starting a record I know nothing about. Can you quickly introduce it for us?
I will introduce it, although I also know very little about it.
Right.
I heard it at work. We put the internet radio on through iTunes, and I've been listening to a radio station called Pig Radio, which plays all sorts of crazy new electronica, but then you'll occasionally get Faith No More and the Stone Roses bunged in. So it's, you know, a good mix of, you know, your young person's dancing music and indie. But they've been playing this record called I Feel Great by Sonido Lassa Drakkar. And I did an internet search for them, and I found a MySpace. And what all I can really gather is that they're an electro band from Mexico. But since their entire MySpace is in Spanish, that's just about all I've been able to gather about them. But I just love the song, really.
Lost control.
aromatherapy. Smell, as they say, to get well. Or in the lingo of the street, bielin, feet pong. By the iron logic of the Lolla di Motto, the study of pseudoscience must, after all, only be pseudo-nonsense. Besides, what could be more austerely rationalist and objective than the forensic analysis of perfume on the radio? Katie, you've been masking your natural odour a lot this morning. What's that about?
Well, when I, thought, I'll go on the radio, I thought, what could be more effective than talking about smell on the radio? I was trying to think of something to talk about, and that kind of ties in with this week's secret theme. And
secret no longer.
Well, but I wouldn't say that I practice aromatherapy as a kind of conscious practitioner, or even particularly think it's that scientific. But I do like to make my place smell nice, and you'll often find me burning oils in my room just to kind of make a smell, and
like kind of red a day. Well, the opposite.
But I do use it occasionally in I suppose you could call it for a medical application, like if you've got a spot, bung a bit of tea tree on, and if you've got a burn, bung a bit of lavender oil on it. And I find it works for me. I like making smells, nice smells. Not bad smells. Stop looking at me like that.
That's one of the things that I think is curious about it, that I know people who are mortally hate the smell of orange peel, for example. So some of these cures must rather suffer by the fact that lavender would make you better, but the person it's being sloshed all over
would maybe hate the smell. I have read and heard that you're only supposed to, because there's millions of essential oils, and a lot of them kind of overlap and are meant to do the same kind of thing. So I've read if you don't like the smell of it, you're not kind of meant to use it, because it will put you in a kind of antsy frame of mind. So if you don't like lavender, then you should try and find something else you do like the smell of and use that as a substitute.
That seems simultaneously sensible and a bit of a get-at clause regards to science.
Well, there's obviously kind of a lot of woolly handshaking around the whole aromatherapy question.
Also, the idea that there are millions of essential oils.
Well, millions.
Rather, what does essential mean in this? You must buy this, also this. They're all essential. Get them all.
it's kind of more, it means essential as in it's the essence of the plant or leaf or wood or whatever that you've distilled it from. So that's what essential means in this case. I have this little bottle here. This is called Holeaf, which I selected because I went into Neil's Yard Remedies, and among all the lavender and geranium and ginger and all the usual ones, there's Holeaf. And I thought, what the bloody hell is that meant to do? So this is kind of an experiment, really. But I did do some...
So is this a leaf of the Ho plant?
Well, this is the leaf, according to the internet, of the camphor laurel.
So it's
camphora.
Killing moths.
Yeah, well, if you smell it, I think you'll see why. But no, this is kind of I found some good facts about this. This is a tree that's native to Taiwan, southern Japan, and China.
Where there are no moths.
Well, this is why. Because this tree is so prolific. But in Australia, it's regarded as an invasive species and has been declared a noxious weed officially. So, and they've got websites devoted to stamping out the camphor tree. It's all very, it's a bit scary, really. But this is Holeaf, which is from China, sourced from China. And does anyone want a smell of the Holeaf?
Give it a go. Go on.
Experiment on Tim.
Oh. Oh, it smells like lavender gone off.
Oh, right. Okay, let's have a proper room. I can see why you say that.
Oh, the moth that lives in my head is...
It's well and truly on its
flying out my ear right now.
Yeah, it's not very nice.
Can I have a go?
Hang on, I'll pass it over to to see.
And what's this supposed to do for me?
Don't spill it in the machine.
According to everything I've read, the Neil's Yard Remedies website.
God, my eyes are watering.
It's used to for nerve and skin support. So it's meant to be good for your nerves. It's meant to be good for stress. Obviously not in your case. No. You'll have to find a substitute. Very good for your skin as well, if you've got acne or whatever.
It doesn't smell that bad. It's kind of a bit licorice-y.
Yeah, it's meant to smell like rosewood, but since I haven't got any rosewood oil and I haven't the foggiest one, it smells like it's probably very expensive, whereas this is quite cheap because the tree is so prolific. But it's just one of the unusual ones, but I've got some kind of more usual ones with me. I've got some bergamot with me, which is meant to be very calming and relaxing and an antidepressant, apparently, although and now I can't get the bottle open.
Me again.
Go on, Tim.
That just smells like Glade air freshener to me. Which, there's nothing wrong with that. It's supposed to smell nice, I guess.
Now, I know that one. I've got a friend who recommended a spritzer of that for when I was having insomnia.
Oh, really?
So I really like the smell of it, actually.
Yeah, this is my personal favourite.
But she also recommended it at another time for when I was feeling very sort of sluggish. And she said, oh, this will wake you up.
It's meant to be, yeah.
It's meant to help you sleep and wake you up, which those are two good things to do.
I think
magic.
I'm going to completely cunningly get out of this one. It's meant to be balancing. So if you're kind of feeling wound up and stressed, it's meant to calm you down. But if you're feeling kind of... It's meant to be generally uplifting and calming.
It's sort of equaliser.
Yeah, it's the equaliser of essential oils.
Edward Woodward.
Yeah.
Edward Woodward in liquid form.
Steve is doing the equalising. We'll see if it helps.
Yes. Oh, no.
I think it's got one of those presenter-proof caps on it.
Yes, it has.
If you push it...
What's the cap smell?
Yes, it smells lovely. I can't get it.
It's kind of citrusy, but not in a harsh way, I would say, was the bergamot.
It's actually quite hard thinking of things to say about smell, isn't it? Because the best you can do is
it smells like something else, but it smells like something.
Except not.
Have a whiff of this one.
Oh, dear. Don't people put that on their cricket bats?
This is tea tree oil that we're...
Oh, I quite like that, but that's sort of... that reminds me of the lab when I was growing up in the building I was growing up in.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was for...
It's kind of...
Keeping...
It's kind of antiseptic.
Yeah, for keeping plant matter, something or other, I don't know, fresh or decayed or in its place. But I do... I come to think of it, I don't think it was the plant matter, I think it was the smell of the primitive...
human beings who worked in this lab.
Using the photocopier machine.
They were all
the photocopying, but it was before they were called...
Yeah,
it was called a Gestetner machine.
Ooh.
And I think it used that.
Oh, right. Because it does have a kind of...
Eli has arrived.
Hello, Eli.
Has he got his coffee?
Yes.
Rather than having loads of silence on air while everyone moves around, what shall we do?
shall we play Tim's record?
Yes. Yeah. Okay, do you want to just very quickly say something about what it is?
This record is a record called Hip Hip by Hararana. Since the lineup of Lollards today was probably the most indie team that we could have picked from our broad array of Lollards, I thought I'd play some proper old Campaign for Real Indie from the old days when people used to make records that were great statements of intent. This is Hip Hip by Hurrah.
Well, I'm sorry about this. We are having slight problems with the indie there. Dreadful state of affairs.
Maybe there's a filter.
I think that possibly... Maybe Resonance just won't allow us to play.
The indie quotient was too high.
I think it could have been, yes.
Cut out.
The indie limiting device up on the wall is going. It's actually almost blowing up.
Oh, dear.
But I'm sure we'll be fine. as Eli's here now, we can... let's see, look, and now it's just started again. How very strange. But we'll come back to that in a minute, I think. Sorry about this.
I think I'll go straight to Tim.
Yes, let's.
Okay.
Once upon a time, pop groups had sensible names, like the Duke of Ellington Orchestra, the Miles Davis Quintet, Lothar and the Hand People. Then came the punk rock explosion, TM, and suddenly every indie idiot became persuaded they too could join in, if only they gave memorable distinction to their individual micro-niche. Lost in an endless list of no-chance nobodies, the name you gave yourself was your first and often your last hope. Tim Hopkins is the indiest man in England, and in fact the second indiest man in this room. He knows
Thank
more
you.
Than he should about this entire disgraceful area of endeavour, the phenomenology of countermarket nominalism, or stop in the name of love. Tim.
I'm going to begin with a short story. Many years ago, actually around 20 years ago now, I was actually in an actual indie band, which is what qualifies me as being the most indie man in England. And
do we actually get to know its name?
No, it's a secret. But diligent research on the internet will probably turn this shameful fact up. Anyway, this particular indie band, you know, we didn't really make any headway. We didn't have any great success. But we once played a show in North Devon, and it was a rectangular room, sort of nightclub room, and I was singing, and they set up the microphone in such a way as it looked out from the stage, which was just a raised area of one side of this nightclub, across a sort of sunken dance floor, and directly across to a pillar on the other end of the dance floor. And on this pillar, on the inside of the pillar facing into the dance floor, was a mirror, which is pretty cool, because actually looking out, I was able to see myself in the mirror. So it was this great combination of actually singing an actual show and also posing in front of the mirror as if you were in your bedroom singing into your hairbrush. Sadly, the days of me using a hairbrush are long past, but I was thinking about that. Anyway, this show was in the town of Westward Ho, excitingly, which is, as every schoolboy knows, the only town in England with an exclamation mark in its name. And as I was thinking about that, I began to think about the habit of pop groups using exclamation marks in their names. This is why you heard a brief blast of Hip Hip by Hurrah! Exclamation mark. And my instinct was to look down on bands who had that sort of showiness to bother with the exclamation mark. It seemed an unnecessary thing. But as I was leafing through my collection of records, I actually found myself warming to bands who finished their name with an exclamation mark. I thought, good work, lads. And I suppose lasses. And I wondered why. So, you know, I was thinking about Wham and Hurrah and This Poison. And I believe Yaz once employed an exclamation mark. Well, I might be wrong about that.
Yeah, I think you are wrong about that.
Okay, I mean Yaz as in Yaz and the Plastic Population.
Where was the exclamation mark?
After Yaz. The okay. Plastic Population didn't.
Not sure about that.
Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway.
I wonder who the first was.
The first exclamation mark?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think perhaps you should have asked this question a couple of days ago and then we could have found it out.
Yeah. No, I only just thought of it.
But I wondered why I was thinking that, and I ended up thinking that actually the use of exclamation mark in your band's name implies a certain sense of goofy enthusiasm that actually has been stamped out of rock music these days. These days everyone seems to take themselves far too seriously to employ exclamation marks, and if you're a kind of exclamation mark band, you're probably not part of rock anymore. You might be part of pop or dance music, and it's Sash. Some people in the pub the other night mentioned Sash being an exclamation mark act, and it seems to me that goofy fun and sort of puppy dog enthusiasm are aspects of rock and indie which have, you know, largely passed out of our vocabulary, and I think it's a shame. On the other hand, there is other punctuation within the context of band names, and in my really not very extensive research about this, I have decided that either employment of exclamation marks partway through a name or employment of other punctuation marks in your band's name is pretty much too much fanny dangle and speaks of an unnecessary level of self-consciousness, and I'm largely speaking against it.
Can you give some examples of this? I'm trying to ensure that I don't bring anyone else in.
The example that springs to mind is Godspeed You Black Emperor, who employ an exclamation mark in their name, but the exclamation mark is motile. So they have been, Godspeed You Black Emperor, and or Godspeed You Black Emperor. And I think they've had one at the end as well. But no, that's punctuation. Unnecessary complication of
punctuation,
your punctuation.
It is punctuation.
It is punctuation gone mad. Absolutely.
There is the new indie band who are called Forward Russia, who do have an exclamation mark at the end, but also have an upside down exclamation mark. I don't know what that term's, the correct term for that is.
Upside down exclamation mark.
Thank you. At the beginning of their name. So I think that possibly cancels out the one at the end.
I think it does. It's also cheating. Somebody mentioned this band to me and said, thing is with them, it means that they come at the top of everybody's playlist on their iPod, whatever that is.
Person's music device.
Oh, don't think I approve of that. Yes, and they've cheated by pushing themselves to above even A Bigger Splash or Band A.
For some reason, Toy Boy by Sunita used to live at the top of my playlist. I think it was because it was...
You played it more often than anything else.
Well, obviously, but I think on top of that, I think because it was square bracket, 02, square bracket, as kind of the number of the song at the beginning of the... So I'm not sure quite what the hierarchy is of marks at the beginning of before you get to A.
No, not.
But clearly, if you could find out what the one that was always, always first, then you could start your band name with that.
I reckon it would be a space. I know if I'm renaming a file and I accidentally press the space bar, so it's kind of a space, and then... So that would be quite... How would you incorporate that into a band name, a space at the beginning?
It seems to me entirely possible that in the history of the last 20 years, there have been bands who thought, I know, we'll call ourselves Space, or even Double Space, and then ran headlong into the concrete problems that this would cause.
Do you think this is the reasoning behind Chuk Chuk Chuk, the band,
the
three exclamation mark name band that apparently is pronounced Chuk Chuk Chuk?
I think it might well be.
Yeah.
If reasoning is the right word for it, that's, I suppose, possible.
It seems entirely reasonable, and again, that's too much punctuation messing about. The other punctuation marks in pop include the band Agrum, who are from where, Mark?
I think they're from Belgium. I think they're quite down the B list of Belgian newbie, but because my record player isn't working, I couldn't actually take the research that far. And I thought of bringing the record in, but it's an LP and it's therefore extremely bulky.
And their name is spelt A semicolon.
Small A. Small A with an accent on it. Small A with a accent grave.
Grave,
I
believe.
Semicolon. Then go to caps. Grumh. ... And on the sleeve of the LP I have, there's various small photos of a portly gentleman and a lithe lady peeing in a shower stool. So I don't know what that tells us about the sound contained in the grooves, but I think it tells us more than we need to know.
No good can
about
possibly
the kind of people that these were.
Yes, I think there's definitely too much information there.
Sorry about that.
Yes, well done. Also, Waters and Carthy, the folk band Waters and Carthy. Spell their name Waterson colon Carthy. It's a family so close they share a colon.
Oh dear.
Oh no.
Yes, the entire 10 minutes has been building to that pun.
Absolutely. Well done,
I think we are now able possibly to play Hip Hip. Tragically, tragically Hip Hip.
Hurrah.
All right, mate.
It keeps us happy. We don't let little things come between us. We don't scare when I put to the test. It's so weak, it's so strong. We got
Hi, Marketing Musketeers. It's Dr. Brand here with another Blue Sky synergy of guess and truth in response to your branding inquiries. I apologize for my cold last time around. I think I'd come down with some sort of English flu. This week's question comes from Delia, who asks, Dr. Brand, I need to know if there are any examples of a product where the cheap own-label version is always better than the expensive branded variety. Great question, Delia. That one really drills down to the fundamentals of brandology. Of course, I know the answer, but first let's go over to our panel for some stretch thinking on the subject.
Panel? I believe that Steve and Tim have a... Yeah, let's go to Tim. He's been talking most all day.
Therefore, I should talk some more. It is my view, dearly and long-held view, that the cheaper the fish finger, the better the fish finger. And supermarket own brand fish fingers, preferably under a pound for 20 if you can locate the same, are the absolute apogee of the fish finger form. And you, ideally with a fish finger, you want a fish finger that will hold together nicely under grilling, but also not resemble fish in any way apart from its taste. The last thing you want is flakes of actual identifiable fish in your fish finger. You want nice big lumpy chunks of potato and just mulch that's been chemically recovered from old fish carcasses that cats have been having a go at. That's my feeling about the fish finger. The fish finger is excellent, cheap, supermarket own brand, and substantially better than nasty bird's eye fillet fingers.
I, on the other hand, strongly disagree with this viewpoint. I think that once you get past a certain level, I've got to have fillet fish fingers. I can't have minced fish fingers. Because I disagree, and I do want flakes of lovely fish. No. Obviously, the problem at the moment is that it's so difficult to get ones that aren't cod, because I'm not eating cod because there's none left.
But it isn't cod anyway. It just says it's cod.
Well, I'm sure that Birdseye, Captain Birdseye wouldn't lie to us, would he?
But he may be being lied to.
But
he doesn't actually put the fish in the fingers.
But he's the captain.
He's in charge of the whole shebang.
You're upsetting me.
But moving on from fish fingers, I think, perhaps wise, I've certainly found that Tesco's Passata, so that's your sieved tomatoes for making your bolognese sauce with, is preferable and half the price of any of the other brands that, you know, your Napoli and your Heinz's, and just the same, it's sieved tomatoes. How far wrong can you go?
Similarly, I'm a big fan of Tesco soya milk, because, as you know, Steve says, it is half the price, and it just says sweetened soy milk, and it doesn't have stuff added or anything. It's just, and it tastes nice too.
It's not milk though.
How's it sweetened if it doesn't have stuff added?
Well, okay, it doesn't have stuff apart from your apple juice or your wheat syrup or whatever thing they use to sweeten it.
It's still not milk.
Alternative to milk.
It doesn't come from a teat. It's not milk.
Are you some sort of milk rockist?
I am very much a milk rockist.
Are you some kind of European directive quoting?
Very much
but
so,
they
yes.
They did have to stop calling it soy milk. They do now have to call it, I assume by law, soya alternative to milk.
Good.
Which is another rant entirely, which I won't go into here. For all our sake.
Sorry, Dr. Brand, we've got a bit off the point there.
Yeah, I think Dr. B should put us out of our misery.
Okay, Delia, time to share my mind space on this one. What you need to understand is why value goods are packaged like they are. Why do Tesco and Sainsbury's have such garish and obvious packs on their cheap lines? It's because of the British class system. Yes, the point of value goods isn't to offer a cheaper option. It's to make sure you know where in society you stand. It's like T-shirts. The cheapest T-shirts aren't the plain white ones. They're plain white ones with a really unpleasant logo sewn on. Value food is the same. Your country may have a minimum wage now, and it may not send kids up chimneys or down the mines, but as long as there's a Tesco value label, your underclass will know its place. Or, alternatively, the answer is fish fingers.
What you desire is what you get. Do you want Herzen. Und dann wieder nach oben gehen, lauf los, denn deine Träume rennen, also hol sie dir. Geh auf die Jagd, jeden Tag musst du vor die Tür. Und wenn du findest, du verdienst mehr als das hier, dann wechsel lieber dein Revier, alles Gute auch von mir. Hau rein, Mann, oder lass es sein, dann hast du weniger Dollar, was gesünder sein kann als die große Leinwand. Schickst Koks und Weinbrand, du musst nur wählen, dann kann dir keiner erzählen. Du hast das Leben verpennt, du bist ein lebendes Hemd. Du bist Student und kein Meister, der einen Meister kennt. Es kann egal sein, ob du studiert hast oder gut kriegst. Was du verdienst, ist was du kannst. Das letzte Mal gebeten, ihr zuliebe aussehen, aufzurobben und von hinten zu poppen, die Wasserwetten durchzurocken und die Nachbarn zu schocken. Das wäre dir doch viel lieber, wenn es der wie früher wäre. So Tage wie dieser von dem alten Kaliber. Sie war der Wide Receiver, du der Traumpassspieler. Und warst du über ihr drüber, war ihre Stimme wie Fieber. Heute erkennt sie, du bist so dekadent. Du hast das Leben verpennt, du bist ein lebendes Hemd. Du bist Student und kein Meister, denn der Meister, der denkt sich, will ich relaxen oder mehr Geld und den ganzen Mist. Was du verdienst, ist was du kannst.
Is what you get. Seems fairly appropriate for today's shenanigans. By Germany's best 11-piece dancehall band, Seed. Also, interestingly, identified by Mark, you know.
They've
got an extra letter in their name.
They have three E's in the middle of their name, I think, is what Mark's trying to say.
And their name takes us by some mysterious process into our next topic. All of us, no matter how stubbornly red-fingered, tend a secret garden in our hearts. Is that true? It must be, or why else would phone salespeople keep trying to sell me a patio for my top-floor flat? More to the point, why else would they keep succeeding? Of course, real actual live plant people like Capability Brown or Alan Titchmarsh or my dad are limited by the growths they can locate, buy, plant and raise. But those of us who only garden in our dreams have access to every lovely item in that Kama Sutra of the outdoor bed, the Sutton Seeds catalogue. So, Car Smile, should we refer to you as Incapability Steve? What page are you on as a gardener?
Well, my grandfather was also a great gardener, and he had a big out the back of his house. They lived in a semi-detached, you know, kind of 50s, 60s council house with a great big garden out the back that he eventually put more and more greenhouses and sheds and potting bits and extra bits that he made out of small bits of other things that he hadn't thrown away. So the garden was just like covered, and it would get to the sort of back end of August, September, and there'd just be 7 tons of tomatoes sitting in his house, and like herbs and lettuce, like fresh lettuce, like all the way through the summer. And I just like, I really think that I should do some proper gardening and grow some vegetables to eat. And somehow we managed to get ourselves on Sutton's mailing list. So they've been sending through the catalogue for the last 6 months or so. And every time I get it, I just sit and think, oh, think about that lovely food that you grow yourself. But it does kind of, the whole catalogue kind of lives in this whole parallel universe where you know, every year there's a new and better variety of all these, you know, just, okay, it's a carrot, in it. Oh, no, we have many, many carrots, and each one is better than the last one. But also they're kind of ideas of, you know, for us as urban gardeners, as it were, there's a thing here under their one of their beans that they're selling, and it says it's recommended for sowing for small gardens, and sown as instructed, a packet of seeds is sufficient for a single row of approximately 27 foot. Now, I don't know about you, but that sounds like quite a big garden to me, unless you just want to grow broad beans. You could have, like, lots of little rows, but that's going to take up, like, half your
patch. Yeah, it says a single row, but you wouldn't plant it in a single row unless you had a really long, narrow garden. You'd plant it in 27 one-foot rows.
It seems to me if you had a really small garden, you'd choose to sow narrow beans rather than broad beans.
I think perhaps that is the point.
Growing.
But, yes, as I was saying, the different kind of varieties of stuff, I mean, you know...
It does, I have to say, like all catalogues, just looking over the at it from here, it looks marvellous.
Oh,
it's
yes.
Lots of lovely pictures and it's lovely stuff.
It's so really, pretty, really it? Kind of... It's very saturated with colour, and it feels like there's lovely pictures of... This is another great thing to do on the radio show, people.
Like when you're holding it up to the microphone
yes.
there.
But then so you've got your... There's a kind of certain poetry about the way that... that it's all written. I mean, just taking you through, these are the different kinds of carrot you can get to grow in your garden this year. You've got F1 Maestro, Banger, Eskimo, Nelson, Amsterdam Forcing, Autumn King, Chantenay Red Cord, Early Nantes, Red...
Early Nantes! That's awesome!
Nantes, like in N-A-N-T-E-S.
That's not what you said.
Red Intermediate. And then you've got the... great ones, the kind of wacky new vegetables, where you've got an F1 Purple Haze, which is what can only be adequately described as a purple carrot. The first hybrid purple carrot, combining great taste and a vigorous growth habit with a colour that will brighten up mealtimes and could be a good way to encourage children to eat vegetables. £1.65 for 180 seeds.
That is a ridiculous bargain, isn't it?
Think of all the... What would you do with all...
You just read out the vegetable shipping forecast there.
It is a bit, isn't
F1,
it?
F1 Purple Haze.
The, I think single-colour vegetables aren't the way to go with encouraging kids. You have to get the full fridge magnet range of colours so that you would actually buy a packet which had like bright purple, bright green, bright orange, bright yellow.
I think maybe that would be a better way. Or just making sure that they were all full of sugar.
And had a magnet.
And had a magnet on them, yes, that would also help, I think.
Purple mashed potato is great. You can buy kind of purple potatoes and you peel them and they kind of boil down to pink, really.
In the old days when potatoes were purple, those were the ones you threw away.
Really?
Well, yes.
I thought they were all just kind of old, like the purple carrots, I thought they were kind of old... varieties that kind of got stamped out because of intensive farming and now they're bringing them back, artisan carrots.
That's conceivable, but
wrong.
Back in the day it meant that the potato had been sticking out of the earth and had gone green and purple because of the sun shining on it, and that bit you weren't supposed to eat, so they made it into crisps.
Oh, but that was a white potato that was meant to be white and went
well
weird.
Presumably that's how they evolved.
Oh, right.
They grew the potatoes on top of the earth and then they were purple. Darwin
yes.
would be pleased.
That's exactly how potatoes grow out of the earth.
Tim, I believe you did some research on vegetable growing.
I did some research on vegetable growing. But when I've moved into my current flat, one of my criteria for where I was going to live was it had to have no gardening responsibilities whatsoever under any circumstances. And I moved into a flat which has no garden, but is in some nice little green grounds where, as you know, I pay a monthly service charge, and which is 1/32nd of the monthly charge for people to come and make the place look nice, and that's exactly how I like it. But I watched, by way of research for today, I watched Grow Your Own Veg on BBC something or other, and it involved extremely enthusiastic ladies trying to persuade you that it actually was really, really easy to grow your own veg. And that was kind of it. It was like, if you put this in the ground, it will grow, and then you'll be able to eat it. And look, it will be like this. Isn't it lovely? And that was the whole show. It was great.
But
it didn't inspire me to grow my own veg. Yeah.
there's not terribly much exciting actually happens beyond digging a hole and putting it in.
And then eating.
I disagree with you there.
Well, you own vast lands in south of London.
My friends have an allotment and they got it last year, and we did all the troop down and start digging it in winter. It was all very bleak. And then we planted the seeds. And then we had a very exciting couple of months where things kept sprouting, but you weren't sure if it was a weed or if it was the carrot. So you were very weeding. It was, you know,
fraught with.
Absolutely fraught. But then kind of these fronds came up, and it was parsnips, and it is.
And that was as expected.
Imagine your disappointment. Oh no!
I hate parsnips.
But by the end of August, the whole place is kind of swimming in green, and there were squashes growing, and the tomato crop, and it was very very exciting, and it tastes lovely.
But that's
proper that grow your own vegetable taste.
I hadn't really put it very clearly. It's unexciting. It's unexciting from a televisual point of view.
Yeah.
Because the excitement is really in the waiting
in the
and the mystery.
Back every week and seeing what's come up. Yeah. I can imagine if you tried to compress it into half an hour, it would be disappointing.
Unless you've got a really good time lapse photography thing.
Well, I was going to ask. Yeah.
Even then, all you're going to see is something. You know, like if you're growing a carrot.
I think we've all seen
a bit of, you know, carrot frondy stuff coming up, and then they're pulling out of the earth and washing it and going,
I think there is, from my gazing at my window boxes as they grow, which is really only herbs because they're very shallow, so they can't really deal with anything else. But when plants first appear, this is going to sound so lame to anyone who knows anything about plants, but the first little sprout, as you say, it's identical to all of the others. It's just two tiny little round leaves. And then as it gets bigger, it turns into a plant. But there's a particular point where they all look exactly the same. And that is quite exciting.
We did have
in some
several weeks over the is it actually a Brussels sprout debate was raging. And some of us wanted to dig it up because it was a weed. And some of us said, no, it looks different to everything around it. So it must. And it's where we planted the Brussels sprout.
What was it?
It was a Brussels sprout.
Phew. My goodness.
Again, imagine your disappointment.
Yeah.
I like the sense of kind of collective conflict. Because most gardeners, there's actually like a designated gardener who's in charge, and then there may be some other people who are made to sort of do quite tedious tasks.
Often children or grandchildren.
Yes. They don't get actually any choice or pleasure in their involvement. But the collective aspect of it sounds much more vivid. So
I think it's time for Dr. Drugs now.
Oh, Dr. Drugs, I'd forgotten about him.
Don't forget about Dr. Drugs.
You should never forget about Dr. Drugs. Do so at your peril.
Yes, we have to turn really to more serious matters. In a world of unfiltered risk, only one man knows his E's from his L-dopa.
He's coming. I can hear him.
He's on the way.
Good morning, international opposers of drugs. I'm Dr. Drugs, and this is another frontline dispatch from the battle to clean up popular culture. Today's letter comes from a young man in higher education. Let's call him Student X. I don't mind admitting, listeners, that initially his letter disturbed me.
Hey, Dr. Drugs. Or maybe I should say Dr. Square. You think you're so clever with your anti-drugs campaign, but I'm way ahead of you, old man. Only yesterday, returning from a trip to the drug shop, I rang up the
radio station X
with a request for There She Goes by the Laws. Get this, they played it. They obviously didn't know that the record's all about drugs.
Well, young fellow, you had me worried there, I admit. Could this jangly Scouser student anthem really carry a darker meaning? Could the magic 60s dust that singer Lee Mavers claimed to find on knackered old recording decks be some kind of marching powder? The answer, glaringly, is no. There She Goes is in fact an excursion into speculative fiction. The key line, "There she goes racing through my veins," refers to Lee's girlfriend who has been miniaturized and sent into his bloodstream. as in the film Fantastic Voyage, or Inner Space. So, young man, your so-called subversion has in fact done nothing but awaken more young listeners to the delights of science. Nice try, moron. Thank you.
Right, in a moment, we have, as we always do, the sneak preview of the UK's number one. Like me, this gentleman has hoes and area codes. Unlike me, they're only girls, apparently. It will be Mr. Ludacris himself. Mr. Ludacris. Meanwhile, you've been listening to Castmile Steve Hewitt.
Goodbye.
Pascal Tim Hopkins.
That's right.
Healy Moo Katie Grocott.
Cheerio.
So what have you been watching? Your life fleeting by. Our producer this week was Eli Sessions.
Kind of.
You can find Freaky Trigger on the web at freakytrigger.co.uk. Stay tuned for the Other Woman, all-female playlist selected by Ruth Barnes, followed by Calling All Pensioners and the Rocket 88 Doo-Wop Rock and Roll Show, which begins at 3. Today's show was brought to you by the word ho. I'm Mark Sinker, and thanks for listening.
I've got holes in different area codes.
Area
codes. Holes, holes, holes in different area codes.
Area
codes.
Now you thought I was just 770 and 404? I'm worldwide, yet act like y'all know it's the abominable ho man. Globe Trot International Postman, neighbor Dick Dope Man. 718s, 202s, I send small cities and states, IOU. 901, matter of fact, 305, I'll jump off the G4, we can meet outside. So control your hormones and keep your drawers on, till I close the door and I'm jumping your bones. 312, 313, 215, 803. I'll read your horoscope and eat some hors d'oeuvres. 10 on pump one, these hoes is self-serve. 757, 410s, my cell phone's just overload.
I've got holes. I've got holes
in different area codes.
Area codes.
is a holiday, so stop the violence and put the 44 away. Get you the whole day. 504-972-713. What you gonna do? You checking out the scene, I'm checking a holding nine. With perpendicular vehicular homicide. 314-201. Too much green, too much fun. I Bangkok in Bangkok. Can't stop, I turn and hit the same spot. Stay nice. I'm the thriller in Manila, slong in Hong Kong. Pimp them like Bishop, Magic, Don Juan. Man, after Henny with a coke and a smile, I just pick up the motherfucking phone and dial. I got my condoms in a big ass sack. I'm slanging this dick like a new jack. Biatch.
Is it cause they like my gangster wall?
Gangster wall.
Is it cause they like my gangster tall?
Gangster tall.
Is it cause they like my handsome face?
Handsome face.
Is it cause they like my gangster way?
Gangster way. Ooh.
Whatever it is, they love it and they just won't let me be.
Won't
I handle my fears. Don't rush me, just relax and let me be free. Whenever I call, come running 212 or 213. You know that I